It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Is it freedom or is it force? Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can just click on the pictures of each of the shows there, and that'll bring up the recap with the podcast for each of the shows, so you can go back and listen to those. And because there's so much information in each one of these shows, be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter while you're over at the website. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast, and our most recent op-eds. In fact, this weekend, in this weekly email newsletter that goes out on Sunday, we will have the op-ed that Alan Thomas has written, A Proposition to End Ballot Propositions. And Alan Thomas is actually in studio with me. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Kim. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. You challenge me. You challenge me. This is going to be a great conversation that we're going to have in segments 3 and 4.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, me too. Thank you to each of you listeners. Thank you for joining us today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. It is Friday, producer Steve.
A rump.
Need we say more? It is, Steve, it is quite a time. Somebody said, Kim, you sound so cheerful. And there are times we're trying to sound cheerful as we really look at these really important issues.
If only that bozo producer of yours could echo that enthusiasm.
You do a great job. I surely appreciate you. We're going to be talking with Patty Kergan here in the first segment. She is a researcher. She's an author. Be sure and check out the book, Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Hard Left Turn and Why America Should Care. And she also does research for the show. And she's been watching daily what is happening with each of these battleground states regarding voters fraud. We're going to get to her in just a moment. Second segment, Dahlia Weinstein will be calling in. We're going to be talking about the hospitalization numbers. And then, of course, Alan Thomas in the third and fourth segment. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Jason McBride and Hal Van Herkey. Our quote for today is from John Adams. You know him. He was an American statesman, attorney, diplomat, writer, founding father, who served as the second president of the United States from 1797 to 1801. Before his presidency, he was a leader of the American Revolution, and so was his cousin, Samuel Adams, that achieved independence from Great Britain. And he served as the first vice president of the United States. He was born in 1735. He died 50 years to the day after America declared our independence from Great Britain. He died on July 4th, 1826. And Alan Thomas, because of our conversation, I chose this particular quote. And this was a letter to John Taylor in 1814 from John Adams. He said, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." They were pretty smart guys.
And like we said, they studied history. This isn't just a quote that they came up with. They were students of history, and their research led to this.
It most definitely did. We'll be talking again more about this in segments 3 and 4. Let's get over to Patty Kergan. She does the research for the show. Again, I said she's an author and a researcher. Before we get to Patty, though, let's play that soundbite of Joe Biden talking about election fraud, Steve.
Secondly, we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this, we have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Oh boy, Alan Thomas, he pretty well explains it. And then Patty's been watching as this is all unfolding. Patty Kergan, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim.
Okay, what happened yesterday?
Okay, this is explosive. what happened in Georgia. I know we're going to talk about Nevada, but we have to talk about Georgia.
What happened?
And, well, the president, this comes from Epoch Times, and I want to stress to the listeners, if you're going to news, go to Epoch Times. They have a great timeline, shows you everything that's going on currently. This article, I this morning looked at CNN, USA Today, MSNBC, ABC, CNN, all those shows, right? No one mentions this. Fox does. They're the only one of the mainstream media. Yesterday, from Epoch Times, and this is, if you go on Parler, you'll find this. It's all over as well. President Donald Trump's legal team on December 3rd presented surveillance footage at a Georgia state legislature hearing that appears to show ballot counting workers telling poll observers late at night on election day to leave before continuing to count and pulling out what appears to be suitcases filled with ballots. A spokesperson for Fulton County in an email to the Epoch Times did not dispute the authenticity of the audio or video. To date, we are aware of no credible reports of voter fraud or wrongdoing in Fulton County. Any credible report of such activity will be investigated and addressed as provided by Georgia law, the spokesperson said, which is just amazing because of this video. You have to go and watch it. So the article continues, in the hearing on December 3rd, Jackie Pick, a lawyer who's volunteering with the campaign's legal case, said the team received video footage from State Farm Arena's Vote Tabulation Center in Fulton County, Georgia. The team said that GOP poll watchers weren't allowed to watch the counting process in the poll center. According to Pick, an unusual occurrence took place in the evening at around 10 p.m. local time. A woman, described as a blonde woman with braids, told workers to continue counting, to stop counting, and notified everyone to go home. Describing the video footage, Pick said everyone clears out, including the Republican observers and the press, but four people stay behind and continue counting and tabulating well into the night. The four counted unobserved until about 1 a.m. Pick said that video footage shows Fulton County election workers waiting at their scanning areas until GOP poll watchers and reporters left the room before they started scanning ballots without any observation. Pick noted that this is against the state and county law. At 11 p.m., once everyone was gone, the workers are seen pulling ballots out from underneath a table. At the hearing, Pick asked whether it's normal to store suitcases of ballots under a tablecloth. She said after reviewing footage that it's not a normal procedure.
You think?
I watched the footage.
I did too.
It's amazing. Right. And there's this table, you know, at the bottom of the screen. It's got a black cloth. And when they know everybody truly has gone, they take the black cloth off the table. And then they just... God knows how many ballots there were. So the article continues. The lawyer further alleged that the same woman with the blonde hair and braids, presumably the manager, had placed the table there earlier. It's not clear where those ballots came from, and it's not clear when the purported suitcases of thousands of ballots were placed under the table. Whether they're suitcases or a special carrier for ballots also isn't clear. Witnesses have sworn in affidavits that the counting continued until the early morning hours. Why are they counting them when the place is cleared out with no witnesses, Pick mm-hmm. said. Yeah. It's amazing. So finally, late last night, it was around, I think it was around 10:30 Eastern time, the governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, he finally calls for a signature audit. Do you think?
They're doing that. I've got to think, Patty, that there's probably video footage because they think this came from a security camera, right?
Correct.
Because
it was in an arena. So the arenas have security cameras all around. I'm hoping like in Detroit, because there's a lot of information that came out of Detroit yesterday. I hope that they have video footage as well.
Well, one would think then that there actually got to be video of who put those ballots there. But as you and I talk, Patty, this mm-hmm. is a kind of a race against time. However, as we continue to have more and more of this information coming forward, and of course the mainstream media is not informing people about that. That's why we all have to be informed and talk with our friends and our family and our colleagues about this. But I know we're on a race against time. December 14th is when the Electoral College meets, right?
Correct.
Okay, so we've got a couple of minutes. What else do you want to hit on this, Patty? That's huge, what you just shared with us.
Right. Well, what you were talking about, who put those suitcases under the table. My understanding, it was the same woman that cleared out the counting area, the blonde-haired lady, and that they actually, supposedly, there has been footage that shows her bringing them in earlier in the morning and stuffing them under the table.
Wow.
So, right.
Okay.
And they have identified one of the ladies, because I guess she had a T-shirt on that said Lady Ruby, and it's a store. She's the owner of a store. So people are saying, well, when is the DOJ or some law official, FBI, maybe going to visit her? You know, this really slaps in the face of people who are like, oh, we need to move on. And we don't. This is the integrity of the presidential office and the integrity of our election system. And this all needs to be investigated. In Nevada yesterday, so they had witnesses that alleged that there were memory disks that were used to store votes earlier in the day. And then in the evening, and there's no explanation given, that the tally vote numbers were changed. There were 130,000 signatures that were not properly verified in Nevada. They have over 40,000 voters that voted twice. When you take this information, Trump's going to win that state. He did win that state. And it's interesting because a commentator that has nothing to do with the election, it was just a news bite on their website that I went onto this morning. They're like, judges, progressives see change to rebalance the courts with Biden. I'm like, you have got to be kidding, because in Pennsylvania, it is clearly a partisan court, the state Supreme Court, and they are not hearing anything that's being brought forth in terms of voter fraud in that state.
We need to get to justice. We need to get to justice on this, Patty. What's your final thought for this morning that you want to leave listeners with? And next week, same thing, you're going to be doing an update every day on what is happening in each of these states. What's the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners this morning?
Don't give up hope.
I like that. I like that. Alan, did you have any comments for Patty?
Yeah, I mean, fraud is fraud, right? We don't technically know where that ballot of suitcases, who they voted for. Even if every single vote in there was for Trump, it's fraud, and it needs to be investigated, and it's not right, and it brings the whole election process into question. So, you know, while I believe they were very unlikely that they were all Trump votes, we still need to admit that that's fraud, and it's wrong.
I totally agree. Go ahead, Patty.
I was just going to say, Alan, we totally agree. And the first thing we said when we started this series this week was, why isn't the Biden camp coming out saying, we want to show that we truly won this election fair and square? Let's do the investigation so that there is no doubt in anybody's mind that I won.
Most definitely, Patty Kergan. Thank you so much. We're going to talk to you on Monday morning, and who knows what's going to happen this weekend. So thanks so much, Patty.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dahlia Weinstein. She is a former writer for the Rocky Mountain News. I'll give you her bio when we come back. But she has been looking at these hospitalization and hospital bed numbers here in Colorado. So stay tuned. You won't want to miss it.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, kimmunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com. You can email me at kimmunson.com as well, M-O-N-S-O-N. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter as well. Dahlia Weinstein is on the line with us. In studio is Alan Thomas. He is an author and commentator, and we'll be talking about an op-ed that he will be having in our weekly newsletter this week. But Dahlia, I've known her for a long time. She was with the Rocky Mountain News. She was the society columnist, and then she left the news to become the founding editor of Denver Magazine. In 2008, she started her company, Clear Creativity, to offer clients freelance writing, editing, and public relations services. In 2018, she ran for the Republican Colorado State House for House District 41, but then withdrew because of a medical issue. She thinks that's a blessing because her voice would be constricted if she was probably down there at the State House right now. A few weeks prior to the 2020 election, Dahlia started producing a video podcast series called Did You Miss This? It began as an effort to inform her liberal friends about the election issues they may have missed if they only follow mainstream media sources. She plans to continue the series highlighting her views on current political issues. Did You Miss This? Can be found at YouTube, Rumble, Vimeo, and Daily Motion. And you can find Dahlia at Did You Miss This? On MeWe, Parler, and Caucus Room. Dahlia Weinstein, I just had to let people know what you've been doing because I've been a fan of yours for a long time. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. That's very sweet of you.
Let's jump in here. You have been breaking down these hospital beds, hospitalizations here in Colorado. So what's the first thing you'd like our listeners to know about this?
Well, it's not even so much that I've been talking about those numbers, because that you get that information every single day, right? That's the big thing every morning. How many new cases, how many people are hospitalized? And what I've been concentrating on is the ICU bed shortage claims, as well as all of these facilities that we paid hundreds of millions of dollars for that are not being used, and trying to figure out if they ever will be used and if they'll be used and worth the money that we spent on them. So that's sort of what I've been focusing on. But just to give you a little bit of the latest numbers, as of today, and I'm looking on the Colorado COVID website, which I look at every day. And the thing I look at first is the hospital data snapshot, because I feel like that's the most important. And I look at the facilities anticipating ICU bed shortages in the next week. And as of today, it's 13%. Now, that's not a huge number. And when you hear the daily, you know, scary reports, it sounds like we're going to have, you know, cots set up in the parking lots of these hospitals. Mm-hmm. So that is sort of where I start every day. And then I look and see all the stories about all these facilities that were built, including in October. And I didn't even realize this until the last couple of days, but they actually shut down two of the facilities, or they said deconstructed. And that would be the one that was built in Loveland, as well as what was the second one? The Western Slope Memory Care in Grand Junction.
Okay, now so explain this. These were facilities that were paid for by the state to prepare for people that would have COVID,
for overflow,
correct? Okay.
For overflow. So originally, I think the original thought was, oh, these are going to be for very sick patients. And come to find out later that really they're supposed to help with overflow of people who no longer need maybe the care in ICU, so they were going to transfer them to these facilities. And the biggest one was the Colorado Convention Center facility. When that was built, it was originally supposed to hold 2,000 beds. It only holds 250. And the cost of that and the Loveland facility is estimated to be $71 million just to build them. And the Loveland one, they just deconstructed. So I don't even know how much that costs to break it down, but it was never used. And not only did we pay to build them, but we are paying to rent the facility as well. So as of today, according to my math, we have paid $14,280,000 just to rent the convention center. And my number can actually be off because I'm starting from the day that I saw the first press conference about the convention center, and that was April 10th. We have another facility in Westminster at St. Anthony's. We're paying $7,800 a day for that facility. So, again, according to my math, $1,856,400 hasn't been used yet. Then we have St. Mary Corwin Medical Center in Pueblo. We're paying $12,000 a day for that. $2,856,000 hasn't been used yet. So I'm just trying to figure out when and if they're going to be used.
Well, and we don't really want them to be used, but they haven't yet. And we're
still spending money on them, and that's sort of where I'm, you know, that's where my fury has been aimed. As recently as June, they did a dry run at the convention center. They only used 200 patients for the dry run for a facility that was supposed to hold up to 2,000. And by the time they were done, they realized that they had a lack of laundry services as well as food and IT infrastructure. So they went to Denver City Council to ask for additional money to help with that. And the council, up to September, had already approved almost $1,500,000 in additional funding. And that was to deal with healthcare models that were showing a COVID spike at the end of September, which never happened. So it's just everything is so up in the air, and everything is based on models. And if the models don't come to fruition, the money has already been spent.
And it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And, you know, we keep hearing, well, we're going to be reimbursed. FEMA's going to reimburse us. Well, they are. But only 75%. So if you do the math, I mean, we're still picking up a large chunk of the bill, and we're not done spending, because if the facilities do wind up opening, then you're talking about operating costs. So it's very frustrating. And, you know, people want answers, and they want to know, you know, why wasn't this money put towards other things? You and I sort of communicated a little bit yesterday. One of the biggest issues I keep hearing about is staffing problems, and that the problem isn't so much the beds and not enough beds or not enough facilities. The problem is not enough staff. So why couldn't a lot of this money have gone to hiring additional staff, contractors? That's something that Governor Polis spoke about a number of times. And it's my understanding that the contracts have already been signed. So why aren't they bringing in additional staff to help?
Good question. Now, hold on just a second, Dahlia, because sure. Alan Thomas is in studio with me. He is a commentator. He's an author. He's also a millennial, so I love to get his perspective on things. And he's shaking his head. Do you have a comment, Alan?
Yeah, it sounds like somebody was able to stay in business through COVID. I mean, where is this rent money going to? I mean, we're talking about thousands of small businesses closing.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. So we're paying the convention center, and who owns the convention center? Colorado. So in a way, we're sort of paying ourselves to a certain extent. But interestingly, and again, this is sort of my deep dive, the people who constructed the convention center as well as the facility in Loveland were two California construction companies, and they were supervised by the Army Corps of Engineers, which they're the ones that wound up costing us an extra $1 billion on the VA hospital. And that was their big sort of claim to fame when all this started, was, well, you know, we did the VA hospital. I wouldn't be bragging about that when it comes to spending government money.
Okay. Now, Dahlia, you're going to be writing an op-ed for us as well, and it'll probably come out next week, I think, because you said you're still working on that, right?
Correct. And I wanted to try to get as much up-to-date information as possible. And what I'll do, and for your listeners, I'll include all of the links, and you're welcome to publish those or whatever you decide to do, so they can go back and look at where I got all of this information from, news reports and articles and things like that.
Okay, Dahlia, let's stay in touch because this is such important information that you are bringing forward and teasing your op-ed that will be in next week's email newsletter. And thank you for the great work that you're doing on this, Dahlia, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Kim.
Okay, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. I asked you how your blood pressure was the other day. Is it still the same level?
I think it's just going to settle in at a new high level for the time being.
You and the Dow, huh? Your blood pressure in the Dow.
That's right.
Hey, we are talking about potential defensive maneuvers, though, with people's pocketbooks. And, you know, we don't know for sure what's going to happen here with the presidential election. I pray for President Trump to get another 4 years. But I think there's also an opportunity here for people to take possibly a portion of their portfolio and put it into more defensive kind of things. And I can't believe that we're, December 4th. People need to be sitting down with you and talking about this right now, Jason.
Well, one way you can be more defensive, Kim, is to defend yourself against higher taxes. And we talked a couple of days ago about kind of the differences between a Roth IRA and an IRA, gave an example of a, you know, married couple, retired, $50,000 of Social Security, $20,000 of investment income. I mean, they don't pay any taxes on that, believe it or not. Their tax rate is zero. But if you have an IRA involved that has required minimum distributions, let's say, of $3,000 a month, all of a sudden, your taxes, this is just federal, are at about $7,500. That's a 21% tax rate on that additional $36,000 that you're kind of forced to take because it's an IRA. Now, it gets even worse if you're in the single tax bracket. So if, you know, one spouse crosses the finish line, so to speak, and leaves the other spouse behind, he or she is going to end up in the single bracket. And then that exact same scenario with only half of the Social Security results in a tax increase of $8,700. So you're looking at a 24% tax rate just on that extra $36,000 a year of income that's coming out of an IRA that's being forced on you. And I guess really the question is, could you convert some of that money to Roth now at a lower rate than what you're looking at that I'm talking about? Now, Kim, the other thing to keep in mind, these tax rates that I'm talking about, this is assuming that the Trump tax cuts stay in place, which if Harris and Biden take over, I would say they're very unlikely to. So the actual tax rates down the road are likely to be much, much higher than I'm discussing right now. So with the low rates we have now, you know, doing some type of Roth conversion may be somewhat of a get out of jail free card.
Well, and Harris-Biden, they have said that they're going to repeal these tax cuts. So we don't give investment advice here on the show. However, it seems to me to make some sense to do some defensive things with a portion of your portfolio, but would recommend each person is different to give you a call, Jason McBride, at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Go through a discovery session to figure out whether or not there's things that can you can do to make sure that you have more money in your pocket. Jason, thank you so much. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a great show, Kim.
You bet. And Alan Thomas is in studio. We will be talking with him in the third and fourth segment. Before we do that, though, Hal Van Herke with Castlegate Knife and Tool is going to weigh in on what he thinks about all of this election fraud, and we'll talk with him when we come back from break.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter while you're over on the website. And we have all of our most recent shows as well as our podcasts and our op-eds there as well. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Hal Van Herke. He is the owner of Castlegate Knife and Tool, which is a valued partner of the Kim Munson Show. It's located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And Sedalia is located in between Castle Rock and the metro area, right on Santa Fe. It's a great little family-owned business. Hal Van Herke, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim. It's a pleasure as always.
Before we talk a little bit about Castlegate, we had Patty Kurgan on. She's been updating us every day regarding the different states, the different challenges going on regarding voter fraud. I mean, it's pretty rampant out there. I'm hoping that we'll be able to prove that in time for Donald Trump to be reelected. But we are in a race against time, Hal Van Herke.
Yeah, I certainly haven't been keeping track of it to that level. But, you know, I do check on, every now and then. But I would say that, unfortunately, my view is that I don't think anything is going to materialize in terms of fraud that's pervasive enough that a court is going to, or that a governor or a legislature is going to delay the certification or reverse the ballot or vote itself. I think what Trump's best options that are remaining are his appeals to the Supreme Court in various states that may have violated their own state constitutions when they allowed absentee balloting or they changed the due dates on when ballots were due, et cetera, and those types of procedural things and whether or not they adhered to their own constitution. I think that's the type of thing that at this stage could actually flip a state or could do something that would have enough impact to change the results of the election.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, and I am praying for a miracle on this because the Divine Provider's had his hand on America since our founding, Hal Van Herke, and I'm hoping he shows up again on this one.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the other key thing we've learned is that we, regardless of whether the timing on this works out, is that we really need to address not just at the national level but at the state and local level, particularly here in Colorado, this Dominion voting system, which I think we've uncovered plenty of evidence that this system was built with fraud in mind. And the system needs to either be corrected, additional measures put in place, or replaced with something else that's more reliable. And I think that's something that, regardless of the outcome of this election, it would be absolutely tragic if we let that drop and we don't address that before the next cycle of elections.
Most definitely. I'm thinking replace with something better is a good idea. But let's jump over here. It is Christmas season, and Castlegate Knife and Tool is ready to help people regarding their Christmas list, their Christmas shopping.
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank all of your listeners that helped us make November our best month in our company's history. So that was very positive.
Oh, and congratulations.
Yeah. So we had a very good month. And as we move into Christmas, we really focus on trying to maintain having things in stock for people because this is the time of the year that everybody's buying knives and gifts and things like that. So we have to make sure that we work to have things available. So we have a very big order of very reasonably priced knives from a brand called K-Bar, which is one of the largest U.S. brands, that are very nice fixed blade knives for outdoor camping and bushcrafting, hunting, et cetera, that we have coming in this week. The following week, we've got a very large shipment coming in of just the opposite, and a very high-end custom line called Medford that's made out of Arizona, that have prices anywhere from $400 to $1,800 that we're getting probably 30 knives in for that. And we'll continue to have all kinds of different brands. The other thing that's new is starting next week, we're going to be highlighting the fact that we actually carry watches in the store as well as knives and a variety of other tools. And so we're going to be highlighting those as well.
Is all that on your website? I know you just recently updated the website at castlegate.com as well.
Right. And that all of the website's up and running and doing great and helped contribute to a solid month last month. It's all going to be on the website as it comes in. The minute that it's in the store, you'll see it on the website. And then we will be posting on all of our social media channels, the various things, just highlighting what we have available.
Well, fantastic. Well, Hal Van Herke, you are a valued partner of the Kim Munson Show. You're going to be in next week to help co-host on one of the shows as well. I think it's next week, and I'll be looking forward to that as well. But check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. Hal, have a great day.
Thank you, Kim.
And Alan Thomas, it is so great to have you in studio with me. You are an author, you're a commentator, you're also a millennial. I love to get your perspective on things. Millennials get a bad rap, Alan Thomas.
Well, I just like that you keep giving me titles. That's getting more exciting every month.
You never know what it's going to be next month, huh?
No, I don't.
But you have written, I think, a very important op-ed that we will have in our newsletter this weekend. And Zach may have it on the website today. It depends just on how much we get done today. But it's a proposition to end ballot propositions. And in the promo that I did, I said that you are challenging me because I have actually liked, or I thought I liked, the initiative process, putting things on the ballot, different issues that we, the people, could vote on because we have the state house, the state senate, and the governorship is all being controlled by radical political activists on the left. But you're challenging that. So tell my listeners why.
Well, and I didn't disagree with you, to be perfectly honest, until very lately and looking at the most recent election. It does give a voice to the people. But when you look at the last election, you look at the ballot propositions more freedom oriented, right? The decreasing the state income tax, a late term abortion ban, versus what progressives put on the ballot. And we kind of forget that, yes, we as conservatives get a voice, but we've also given a voice to progressives to push very radical agenda and policies. And when you look at what they got passed, one, giving away our electoral votes to a national popular vote, paid family medical leave, the very unscientific introduction of wolves to Colorado, versus what we got passed, which is a very minimal state income tax decrease. I sat back and I said, we're not winning. You know, these ballot propositions did not take us closer to freedom, closer to wrangling the government into the proper role of government. In fact, I feel like we took a large step away, where we're now stealing from citizens, taking their money to pay for a wanton desire of this paid family medical leave. So when you look at it pragmatically, this election, we absolutely failed in the ballot proposition process. If you take that and you look forward and say we take back the governorship, the state house, and the state senate, just theoretically in 2, 6, 10 years, say we get that, and we're passing common sense legislation, and the progressives decide that they no longer have a voice in the state house, so they start going to the ballot proposition process, and let's not even stretch the imagination. Let's say they come up with this idea for universal basic income, and they pay for enough people to go get signatures, they get it on the ballot, and I think our state has shown, it's not a stretch of the imagination, that 50% of the state could perhaps say, universal basic income sounds like a great idea. Let's go ahead and do it. If we were in control of every aspect of the state government, would we think that it's a good idea that this could get passed by the people who can be easily swayed with like I said, fancy rhetoric and wants and desires? And pragmatically, I would say no. And there's also a very big philosophical case to be made against the ability of a pure democracy of citizens voting directly on propositions. And the quote by John Adams that you quoted today is a perfect example of, you know, very learned men compiling philosophy and history and designing the government the way we had it. And it was never to include a pure democracy and citizens having a direct voice in legislation.
And I hadn't really thought about that, Alan. And like I say, you always do this with your op-eds. You make me stop and say, wait a minute, because you're right. This is basically like a direct democracy. And the founders realized direct democracies ultimately then gets to mob rule. And that is why they put in place a democratic constitutional republic. And I hadn't really thought about that this is diametrically opposed to that, Alan Thomas.
Right. And the point of that is human nature doesn't change, right? That's why mob rule is so important to talk about. And it's an iffy kind of way to say it, because nobody ever wants to say they're part of a mob, especially when they're voting for policies. But we are so easily swayed, and public opinion has the memory of a goldfish. And it's so easy for
politics. No offense to goldfish.
No offense to goldfish, absolutely. I mean, it's as old as time, politicians swaying public opinion to get what they want, to increase their power, to increase the power of government. And that is one thing that the founders saw. They saw that, like communism, democracy has failed everywhere it's been implemented. A pure democracy has failed everywhere. And I mean, even Herod was able to sway public opinion against the babies in Bethlehem. I mean, he was able to try and sway public opinion against the wise men. You know, we're coming up on Christmas. It's in the Bible, politicians trying to use their influence to sway public opinion. And the founders saw that, and they created a government which is brilliant, because one, it protects the citizens against themselves. And I say it with a caveat that not the way politicians nowadays are saying, you know, they're using that as a reason to say, oh, COVID, we need to protect you against yourselves. No, what the founder said is, when you have a pure democracy, when you have this mob rule, you have the possibility of citizens willing to vote to take away their own rights and liberties, or you have the tyranny of the majority. I think I used this last time I was on here, when two wolves and a sheep vote on what's for dinner, the sheep's going to be very disappointed in the outcome for it. And the founders knew that that's human nature. That's human nature for the tyranny of the majority. And so they created a government to protect against that, to secure our natural rights by shackling down the government and binding it to the Constitution and saying, you have to protect natural rights no matter what. Knowing that if you give the ability for the mobs and the masses to vote on legislation, history has shown they will vote against themselves without even knowing it.
Okay. You know what? I want to go to break, but I want to get your comments about Tabor, Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, about whether or not, and that is an amendment to the Constitution that says that if a government wants to raise taxes, if they want to incur debt, or if they want government to keep excess revenues, basically above a population plus inflation, that they have to ask the people. I've thought that that was a good idea. When I was on city council, there were politicians that said, oh, this is not constitutional because we are a constitutional republic. We should have the right to raise taxes instead of asking the people. I want to get your opinion on that when we come back from break, Alan Thomas. Before we do that, though, And one of my great partners is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations here: Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Colorado Springs. Their patios are open. They have heaters. In fact, trying to figure out where to meet for a meeting that I'm going to have tomorrow afternoon, we're going to go over to Hooters and have some of their specials. They do have to-go specials, so you can pick up dinner and take it home. And be sure and check that out at HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Alan Thomas.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
It's the most Merry Christmas. Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter while you're there, and you get first look at all of our upcoming upcoming guests, most recent podcasts, and most recent op-eds. And Alan Thomas, his op-ed will be in this week's newsletter, A Proposition to End Ballot Propositions. You are convincing me. We are a constitutional republic, but over all of these years since America was created, almost since day one, politicians have been trying to figure out how to get more and more power. They've created the bureaucratic state as well, the administrative state. Tabor, that was a proposition that was on the ballot back in 1992 to try to constrict government spending, to say you have to ask us if you want to spend our money. I've liked that. What's your thoughts about that, Alan Thomas?
Well, there's really two parts to it, and you never ask easy questions here either. So thanks for addressing that. So, you know, Tabor has worked in large part, I would argue, because of the Western independence and the Western spirit of Colorado. You know, right now, Coloradans in large part say no more taxes, don't increase my fees. I like living the way I am. So Tabor works because of the demographics of Colorado right now. The question we have to ask is, in 15 years, if California keeps moving to Colorado, will the public still be against taxes the same way that they are now? And that's kind of the high stakes game that we're playing with ballot propositions is, you know, if we are ineffective in our messaging as Republicans and as freedom thinkers in the next 10, 15 years, what if the state legislature proposes universal basic income and it has to go on the ballot and the people of Colorado have to vote for it? Well, you're now giving that power to increase taxes on businesses, on regular citizens, on the middle class. You're giving that power to the people who are easily influenced by propaganda, by social and mass media. And while I agree with you, I've liked Tabor in the past, we do have to question whether in the future, will it be a good idea? Is it still going to be a good idea if the demographics of the state change? And the whole issue around a lot of this is the lack of civic knowledge that we have nowadays. People don't understand how and why our government is set up the way it is. And in large part, progressives have been very effective at controlling education in the schools. And when people don't understand what natural rights even are, Kim, how are they going to respect property rights? How are they going to respect the rights of business owners who are just trying to succeed? And how are they going to see taxation beyond what's absolutely necessary as theft if they aren't educated enough in our civic process? And that's what we're fighting right now. As long as we can keep people educated enough that, hey, these taxes are virtually theft, how our state government can't even keep roads together. Why do they need more money? They continually misuse our money, as we heard from Dahlia earlier. Why do we need to increase taxes? You know, these are the questions that we're going to have to grapple with in the future if the demographics of the state continue to slide the way that they have.
Okay, this is going to be a real character question. When I was on city council, I voted against the Southeast Light Rail extension. And the reason is because it was estimated to be about $207 million for 2.3 miles. Think about that. You can do a lot of road construction for $207 million. When I actually broke down the numbers and looked at the bids coming in, it was more like $250 plus million. But in that, Obama had what was called New Starts grants, giving federal money to different municipalities, because the goal is they want to get people out of their cars, everyday people out of their cars. Now, they'll drive around in cars. And if you ever go down...
Or fly in planes.
If you ever go downtown and you see all those different hoods that are on the parking meters, that is being reserved for your politicians and your bureaucrats and interested parties. They have special passes, and they get to park there because they are driving their personal cars. And I realized inherently that freedom of mobility is inherent in the American idea. And I was uncomfortable with pushing us to this light rail. But then I really looked at it and I said, if we want to have this in our region, we should pay for it from this region. But it included $92 million in federal money. And the federal government doesn't have the money. And we're borrowing from our neighbors and our children. And that seemed inherently wrong to me. And what I heard from people on both sides of the aisle is, Kim, if we don't take that money, somebody else will. And that was very disconcerting to me, Alan Thomas. Your thoughts?
That's kind of the point of all of this, right? People aren't educated on where money comes from. They feel like the federal government can just print money, which it ironically has. And that's why we have such a federal deficit and the Fed, but that's a different separate issue. But that's what paid family medical leave was this year. It was a want and a desire, not necessarily what was constitutionally sound, not what's absolutely right, not what the proper role of government is. And people are very willing now, when they're not civically educated enough, to vote for what they want. And that's the allure of socialism. That's the allure of progressivism. It's, hey, here's a problem. Let me help you as the government. And people saying, sure, I want you to help me. But unknowingly, they give the power to the government.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The thing about socialism, which I have finally realized, it's not about free stuff, Alan. That's the carrot to get people to vote for it. Ultimately, then what happens is socialism and communism, they have to have workers. But the thing is who gets to keep the fruits of the labor of those workers? In the American idea, it's property rights. It's the individual. In socialism and communism, it's the government and it's the bureaucrats. That's the big difference. That's the fight that we have going on here right now, Alan Thomas.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a bait and switch for sure. I mean, you even see it with COVID. You see it with, what our politicians are doing. Like you said, they'll tell you to not take cars, but then they reserve their parking spot next to the state capitol. They'll tell you to watch your fossil fuels, but then Al Gore will jet around in his private jet all around the globe, or John Kerry and all these Democrats. They tell you one thing, they do another, because they know that they can do that. They know that the wool has been pulled over so many people's eyes, and they say, if I can promise them enough things, if I can promise to help their lives enough, they'll keep me in power and I don't have to worry about it.
But the everyday people's lives get worse. Ultimately, right. There's less of their property, less of their own money in their pocket to take care of themselves and their families. Alan Thomas, I love having you in studio. I love these op-eds. I recommend that people sign up for our weekly newsletter so that they see that. We've got about a minute and a half left. What's your final thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
So the final thoughts I have is I just wanted to, again, bring it back to whether pure democracy is good or not. And there's a quote from Madison in Federalist Number 10. And he said, "Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention. have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. So again, when we're thinking about this topic of ballot propositions, we need to think that democracies have ever been found incompatible with personal security and the rights of people. So we need to be very cautious, and we need to use democracy as a bad word, similar to communism, that democracy is not a good thing. A constitutional republic that binds the natural rights to people is a good thing.
It's a very good thing. And Alan Thomas, I so love having you in studio. And again, go to my website, that's kimmunson.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And then that way you will get the first look at this really terrific op-ed. Alan, it's great to have you here.
Thanks again for having me.
And our quote for today is John Adams and James Madison. Wouldn't you have loved to have been gone to dinner with these guys?
Oh, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they had these discussions.
So this is a little long, but this is what John Adams said in 1763, an essay on man's lust for power. He said, "Democracy will soon degenerate into an anarchy, such an anarchy that every man will do what is right in his own eyes, and no man's life or property or reputation or liberty will be secure. And every one of these will soon mold itself into a system of subordination of all the moral virtues and intellectual abilities, all the powers of wealth, beauty, wit, and science, to the wanton pleasures, the capricious will, and the cruelty of one or a very few." Wow. My friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.